This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
You're listening to This Day in History, a podcast dedicated to examining history from a standpoint of determining which event on any given day had the greatest impact on our lives. Now your host, Tony Hubert and Armand Kachigian.
Tony Hubert here, Armand Kachigian alongside, and welcome to This Day in History on lineupmedia.fm, our inaugural show, Armand.
Yes, I guess that means our first, correct?
That would be our first. All right. And we start on November 21st here in 2016 as we bring you This Day in History each and every day.
Yeah. Would you like to give kind of a rundown of what we're trying to accomplish here?
So the show's premise,
I don't know what it is,
is very simple, and you know what it is. Throughout the course of history, events tend to happen on days. Therefore, you can record them and say what happened on this date, and then gentlemen like you and I can come in and debate. Well,
I think we'll debate.
Which of those events had the biggest effect on the world we live in today? And we'll do that, plus who was born on this date, who died on this date, and a few other observations from
maybe
our mind.
A little wrangling about our political differences.
If it happens to be something tangent to this day in history, why not?
All right.
Why not? So, for instance, on this date in history, November the 21st, 1789, did you know, Armand, North Carolina ratified the U.S. Constitution, and they became the 12th U.S. state.
I didn't know that, but I do know who it's named after.
Carolina?
Yeah.
Queen?
Would you like to know?
No.
King.
King?
King Charles.
King Charles, the feminine of Carolina.
Carolus. Yes, yeah. Carolus. Latin.
1916, in World War I, a mine exploded, and that mine sunk the ship HMS HS.
Yes.
I'll get to the additional H in a second. The HMS HS Britannic in the Aegean Sea, killing 30 people. Can you name the manufacturer of that ship? And can you name the two sister ships of that ship?
Well, yes, of course. The sister ships were the Olympic and the Titanic. I think it was Harland and...
Starts with a W.
Oh, boy, I should know that.
Wolf.
Wolf. Harland and Wolf. Irish. I believe they were from Ireland.
Belfast.
They? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. The ship sank. The HMHS categorization is because at that point in World War I, it was a naval hospital ship.
Correct. Yes. I think it had mine, didn't it?
And yes, it did. And was actually painted in all white with the Red Cross on it. In 1920.
But what's interesting is only 30 people died because they had all the
And also, did you know that there is
safety precautions?
There was a White Star employee who served and survived the Titanic, Olympic, and the Britannic.
Did the Olympic, did that sink too?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll have to look that one up.
On this date in 1920, the Irish War of Independence in Dublin, 31 people are killed in what became known as Bloody Sunday.
Yeah, there have been several Bloody Sundays.
There have. Music fans think this is the one that the U2 song refers to.
Oh, is it? Okay.
It is not.
I thought that was one in, 71 or whatever?
71 in Anniskillen, Ireland.
Oh, okay.
Okay. 1922, Rebecca Latimer Felton of Georgia, she takes the oath of office. Which oath? She becomes the first female United States Senator.
Yeah, and then we were discussing that, there's a trivia question, who is the first elected, I guess, and that's Hattie Carraway from Arkansas. So if you're in a trivia contest and someone asks you, but I looked it up, and I never heard of Rebecca Felton. She was only she's from Georgia, one day. So, and it was kind of
just
an appointment.
One day.
Yeah, kind of a
in 1959,
formality.
Mm-hmm. American disc jockey Alan Freed, who popularized that term.
I think he coined that
rock
term.
Rock and roll.
Correct.
He's fired from WABC Radio for refusing to deny allegations that he had participated in the payola scandal, meaning Alan Freed had gotten some payola.
Yeah.
To be a disc jockey in the 1950s.
Well, at least he was honest about it. He took payola, I think we all know that.
The Second Vatican Council in 1964, this date in 1964, their third session of the Roman Church's Ecumenical Council closes, and I can tell you there were probably a whole bunch of people glad to be going home by that time.
I have no idea what they did. They establish anything? I mean, it's one of those.
Oh, yes, they did.
A difference between that's, God and Jesus,
no,
et cetera.
No, that, they, that
that's
is,
what those
that
councils
commonly referred
tend to,
as, to
do.
As Vatican II, for
okay.
short. Which,
and what was this? I mean, can you give
well,
me
it brought a, well, for instance, you can hear a Mass in English. Today.
Oh, okay. All
and
right.
If you were going in the Catholic service pre, you were listening in Latin.
Latin, of course, yeah. And anything about contraception or anything like that?
They tend not to.
All right. I'm just trying to bring sex into the show.
Other than to keep it out.
I think it would be good for our ratings.
In 1967, in the Vietnam War, American General William Westmoreland, he tells news reporters, "I am absolutely certain that whereas in 1965 the enemy was winning, today he is certainly losing." Now, of course, on November 21st, 1967, a little thing called Tet had not happened yet.
Right. I think it was coming up, though.
Yeah, just weeks away, in fact.
Which, we won that one, too, but we lost that war.
Won the battles, lost the war.
Yes, we'll discuss Tet sometime.
And in 1986, the Iran-Contra Affair National Security Council member, Oliver North, and his secretary...
I think you better put that in quotes, secretary. If that was Fawn Hall, he was more than just she was just more than a sec, just like Kay Summersby was.
But I don't think okay. her
is that the same person.
But I don't think her 401(k) stipulated that.
Well, Kay Summersby was Eisenhower's quote driver.
Driver,
yeah.
Well, much to Mamie's chagrin.
It's a euphemism.
And she, Fawn Hall, and Oliver North, they start to shred the documents allegedly implicating them in the sale of weapons to Iran. Now, why do I know the Iran-Contra affair so well? Well, because Fawn Hall was in the Senate hearings, and as a young high school boy, it made turning on the Senate hearings a little easier to take.
She was a nice-looking woman. I think she posed in one of the...
I will leave that to you.
I'm going
to
look that up.
To find
yes,
out.
Yes, I'll find that, and I will peruse all the pictures.
Those are none of the topics we're going to be discussing in length.
Just in passing.
In fact, there are five discussion topics that we offer to you to see what you think has the most effect on our lives today. These events all occurred on this date in history, and how much of a determination can you make as to how they affected our lives today? We shall see. The first one, Armand, we go to November 21st, 1906.
Yes.
China prohibits the opium trade.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that was actually a good policy. I mean... You know how I think you know how I stand on the drugs. I say legalize all of them and no restrictions whatsoever. Now, as far as that goes, you know, opium made a lot of money for China. I mean, they fought two wars, the British and then the British and French fought the Arrow War, I believe it was, in the 1850s.
Yeah.
1906, that's Qing Dynasty. It's a Q-I-N-G. I don't know. I don't have it in my notes. But anyway, I don't have they actually have quite a problem with it now. China.
Well, certainly
they still have, I think, 20 million addicts.
Compared to then, though, and there's a knock-on effect to this that I think's worthy about talking about. The following I'm going to read you, Armand, is actually from a website called druglibrary.org.
All right.
Okay. And it's just one paragraph from this topic. In 1906, the incredible happened. After over 100 years of steady demoralization, with half of China's population opium addicts or worse, making enormous profits out of the trade, China determined to give up opium. In all of history, there is no nation that ever set itself such a gigantic task.
Good luck.
In terms of doing that. China, a country of immense distances with, in 1906, scant means of communication, no common language, mind you, and a land where only scholars can read and write, suddenly decided they're going to free themselves of that vice. The emperor issued an edict saying that in 10 years' time, all opium traffic must cease. An arrangement was made with Great Britain whereby this might be accomplished. And to the honor of America, the United States, it is said that the Americans assisted China in this resolution.
Well, there's some sort of – I think there's hypocrisy in that. First of all, I think the Chinese – it wasn't to get high. Initially, I think it was an aphrodisiac is what they used it for, the opium. And it was – it was used for several purposes, including – it was medicinal.
Actual.
But
it's still – you have a nation of addicts in 1906.
Well, right. Well, the British made a lot of money off
sure
of the East India Company, et cetera, and that's what kind of started these wars, that they were actually importing opium to China from India.
What do you think the knock-on effect, though, of – any prohibition, this is a big one, opium,
Yeah.
A prohibition that creates a black market that within two decades, there are laws passed. I mean, in 1919, Prohibition Act on alcohol in the United States. Yeah. But later in the 1930s in the United States, the classification of certain drugs as narcotics, which went all the way down to marijuana.
Yeah. Well, we've just, I don't know. I don't know how those votes turned out, but
a lot of nine states. A lot of states passed them
I think Trump wants to legalize it all 50, I think he said. I'm not sure about if he's going to do that or if he's really serious.
The second knock-on effect about China and the opium trade I wanted to mention is, in a nation like that, creating a void like that, how much did that lead to the rise of nationalistic communism in Mao Zedong?
Well, nationalism, definitely. But communism, I'm not sure. I think he used it as sort of a linchpin for his, you know, I think it was probably portrayed as being part of the capitalism and the decadence that he wanted to change. I'm not sure how he used it himself. Whether he may have even used it, you know, for his troops. I'm not sure. I'm more familiar with the Treaty of Nanking and the Opium Wars. The Arrow War is an interesting war of the French and English against the Chinese. But all I have to say is that, you know, drugs in general, I have a medical background, mm-hmm. and I routinely prescribe medication, which is much, much stronger than opium. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's rather arbitrary what we make legal and illegal. And this heroin addiction problem we have in the United States is definitely secondary to the, pretty much the prescription of opioid drugs.
How much geopolitically from opium production moving out of China at that point to other Southeastern nations, other Central Asian or even Mideastern nations, such as Afghanistan? I don't even see Afghanistan is a Mideast nation. It's a Central Asian geography, geographically speaking.
Yeah.
And then even in places at that point in time, like Mexico, which the uptake in opium in the 1800s, production in 1800s, early 1900s, it's moving up.
I think we are feeling the effects of it. That's why we're discussing it.
That's
on
why we
show,
are, but... yeah, because.
I don't know. Anytime, I think my opinion is anytime that you're trying to grapple with what we would call human vice, you're going to have is gambling, drinking,
or where you create
women,
a prohibition,
or sex, whatever.
And create a void.
Yeah, I think you're spitting against the wind there. So,
all right, our second topic on this day in history, November 21st, we got to go all the way back to BC.
Wow, BCE.
BCE.
We have to be
correct
on this show.
BCE. The year 164 BCE, during the Maccabean Revolt, Judas Maccabeus recaptures Jerusalem and rededicates the Second Temple. That commemoration of the rededication of the Second Temple is forever thereafter known as
Hanukkah.
Has there ever been a piece of real estate in the world more contested than that one?
You mean Palestine and that area?
Specifically the Rock.
Oh, yeah. I'd say there's been a lot of bloodshed over that. The interesting thing is, you know who the revolt was against?
No.
The Seleucid Empire. Seleucus was one of Alexander's generals. After he died, they split up his empire into several, and he had quite a bit of a big chunk of it, so including that area.
And that's only one...
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even a generation. That's one degree of separation from Alexander the Great.
I think he died 330, something like that, 330 BC.
Okay, a little bit of separation.
But, I mean, it's his empire, but he's the one that founded it. He had been long dead.
Well, and it's also noticeable at this time, the Second Temple and a rededication of it, 164 BC, you're scan 164 years, depending on when you believe that the birth of Christ happens.
Yes. Yes, well,
never had I realized that those events in history were actually close to each other chronologically.
What's that?
The Second Temple,
right?
And Christ coming along 150, let's call it 155, 160 years later, depending on how the calendar would work.
That's true. I'll contemplate that.
Yeah. Do so. Want to remind everybody that you can follow us, our website, and it's a brand new website. It'll be loaded up soon, todayinhistoryshow.com. today.com. That's todayinhistoryshow.com. Follow us there. You can find the episodes as every day gets released and more, and you can download them for your listening pleasure. And of course, you'll be able to follow us on our Facebook account as well. So the knock-on effect of that piece of real estate,
well, I think
being taken, and again, here is the second time this has occurred, and it's going to occur again.
Yeah, the Romans are coming.
And it's going to occur again, and it's going to occur again, and again, and even today there are people waiting for that reoccurrence.
Well, we're going to I'm sure there'll be plenty of times to discuss all these this Middle Eastern turmoil, that a lot of events that we can discuss, which I'd be glad to, because I have some, as always, have some pretty strong opinions on that area.
But Armand is not one to shy away on the opinion front.
I don't
again,
mind.
This will not be
controversy.
This will not be a dry show. This you're going to get a lot, and you're going to get a lot of opinion. You're going to get a lot of humor. How about some birthdays before we move on to some of the other topics?
Oh, that'd be great.
How about this? 1694, Voltaire.
Oh, Voltaire. That wasn't his real name. Arouet was his real name, I believe. Was it Francois Arouet? Anyway, he was an author. I recommend everybody read Candide. It's not a very long book. It's interesting.
Do you think that's still required reading in high school?
I
remember reading it in high school and in college.
But Dr. Pangloss is the character you want to focus on, who is saying that this is the best of all possible worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Whether actually Voltaire actually thought that or not, I'm not sure. Now, here's something Voltaire did not say and has been attributed to him. I disagree with what you say, but I'll fight to the death for your right to say it. He did not. That was not a quote by Voltaire, even though it's attributed to him.
Hmm.
It was actually his secretary, I believe, that said he said that.
Yeah, for the French Fawn Hall.
Yeah.
Of course, they didn't shred documents back then. They just burned them.
No, and sometimes the secretaries, too. But she quoted him, supposedly, and he did not say, or she was his biographer, or amanuensis. Is that what that is?
Amanuensis.
Amanuensis.
I have no idea what that means, but I like the sound of it.
Yeah.
In 1787, Samuel Cunard was born.
Oh,
we were talking about White Star earlier.
He's the competition.
I felt that, and I've seen the Cunard building. I hope I'm pronouncing this right, because there's different ways to say this.
Cunard.
I've seen the Cunard building in Liverpool. It's wonderful.
Yeah, Queen Mary.
Architectural
Cunard,
art. Yeah. And they were the main rivals to White Star.
White Star, yeah.
On November 21st, 1920, the Donora Greyhound. Stan Musial.
Is that what he's called?
Yeah.
Well, I just call him Stan the Man.
Yeah. Donora, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
That was one of his early names before the, and I don't know if you might know this, do you know which group of fans gave him the nickname The Man? It was not Cardinal fans.
No, I don't know that.
It's Brooklyn Dodgers.
Oh, the Dodgers.
Fans.
Okay.
They nicknamed him because they would say, the crowd would go, oh, here comes that man again.
As opposed to like Boston and their nicknames for is it Bob Boone and Bucky Dent, their nickname.
Dent.
Yeah, I don't know if we can say it on our show, but Bob Boone's got the same. Yeah, he has the same super K.
In 1927, Georgia Frontier was born. The owner of the Los Angeles Rams and subsequently the St. Louis Rams.
Moved him to St. Louis.
In 1944, Dick Durbin was born, just miles from where Armand lived for quite some time during his life. He was born and went to high school in East St. Louis, Illinois. Armand probably then subsequently voted against him many times.
Absolutely.
Okay. In 1944,
but he still wins.
Earl Monroe was born.
Earl the Pearl, yeah. Tennis player?
No, basketball.
Basketball.
Earl Monroe. New York Knick, baby. Yeah, okay. New York Knick. 1944, Harold Ramis.
Oh, I know him. He actually went to school at my alma mater. He's a Wash U boy.
He is a Washington University.
And Animal House is based on a fraternity at Washington.
I always hear that. Every college I go to, they tell me that there's a fraternity here.
I met him
that
once.
Animal House is based. Have you?
I wouldn't say I met him.
His acquaintance.
He was the grand marshal of our parade, and he happened to be at like the homecoming, whatever. And I was in a drunken stupor, and I went up to him and told him how you're a funny bastard, and he just kind of walked away. You're funny.
One of the great comedy writers.
Man, he died too soon.
Man, did he influence the comedy movies of the late 70s and early 80s. 1945, Goldie Hawn is born.
Okay, she's still around.
She produced
a very
lovely daughter. In 1966, Troy Aikman. And in 1969, the son of Ken Griffey, Ken Griffey Jr.
That's appropriate.
Is born, one of the great ball players who doesn't have the stigma of steroids attached to him. Let me remind you that This Day in History is brought to you by Audible.com. You can go to
Audible.com,
and because we're talking history, there is no shortage.
Yeah, this is where you should go, and this I've got a couple of books I'll recommend.
Yeah, Armand's recommendation on reading, well, if you let him get going a little too much, you'll have to take a couple years vacation just to catch up. So when you go to Audible,
it's time well spent.
At audibletrial.com, you'll be able to find us, and you'll be able to get a 30-day free download. Okay?
Oh, wow, that's a good deal.
30-day free trial.
Are we eligible for that too?
Why wouldn't we be? There's over 180,000 titles sitting there for you to choose from. Okay.
All right.
Back to the big topics.
Okay, now this is one of my favorites.
Armand has one, and in this date, we have to, we come to America.
Well, let's just do Edison and the phonograph, in passing.
Do you really want to save your...
Yeah, I kind of do, because we all know what Edison the phonograph means. Yeah, I mean, that's a big deal, obviously.
I'm going to put something in different for the next one.
Okay.
Okay. Right. But on this date, in the year 1620.
Yeah.
The Mayflower Compact was signed by the pilgrims at Cape Cod. Armand Kachigian,
I turn the floor to you. Yes, silence, please, while I get...
Pray silence
for a stem winder here. All right. Now, I think... Now, we all know, or we should know, that this is actually the first document, legal document, in the New World, or the first form of government. It did not grant actually independence to anybody. A little background information: the Pilgrims, the ship had about a crew of 30, I believe, and I think there were 100 passengers on the Mayflower. 41, I believe, of which are coming from Leiden, which is in the Netherlands. They did not come from England. They were these are the Pilgrims. And the reason they left the Netherlands, and this is, you want to talk about something that has a lot to do with today, and, apparently they didn't like the Netherlands because they partied too much in the Netherlands, and they were
You
leaving.
Don't say.
Yeah, how do you like that?
Imagine the Netherlands.
Have things changed much? No,
do you think they had
a
red
so.
Light district in the Netherlands in the early 1600s?
Probably, absolutely, and probably opium too.
Do you know why it's called a red light district?
I think it's the light in the window, isn't it?
So there would be a light in the window, and they would drape a red cloth over it to signify.
I think you told me that once, and I should remember that.
Hence, red
light.
Yes,
come on in.
Yes,
open for business. Anyway, they didn't like the fact that that Sabbath was a big holiday. It was pretty much every day was a holiday in Amsterdam, and so they didn't like the way they celebrated that, because that was supposed to be a day of abstemiousness and self introspection, and commuting with God, etc. Well, that's not what they did. So they left. Okay.
Well, if you smoke enough in Amsterdam,
you'll commute with all kinds of gods, Zeus and everybody, Odin, Sleipnir, his horse. So the eight-legged horse. And anyway, so they came here. And then now the rest of the people were actually coming to work for, I believe, an ironmonger. He was wanting to set up some sort of business in Virginia. They're supposed to go to Virginia, where there was already a colony.
Well, Jamestown had been established
1607,
13 years earlier.
Right. Well, that's where they're going, to the mouth of the Hudson. That's where they were heading. And they decided to stop and not go there and stay in Massachusetts. Well, they also had some indentured servants with them, about 18, 20 of them. And they're supposed to work for this ironmonger or whatever he was, costermonger, which is a... You know what that is?
A costermonger.
Coster, C-O-S-T-E-R. It's just a joke. It's a fruit stand.
Oh, it's a fruit
stand. It's a guy
stand.
Who sells fruit, costermonger. Okay. So anyway.
Coster in Latin means an encampment.
Oh, okay.
And anglicized, it becomes Chester, and that's why you have towns like Manchester.
Chester,
Winchester.
Correct.
Chester.
Yeah, right. That makes sense. But costermonger, I have to look up how they got that. But, well, anyway, the servant said, well, okay, we were supposed to go to Virginia, and since we're not going to Virginia, the hell with you. We're not going to give you 7 years of servitude. Yeah, true.
I like their style already.
Yeah, well, now we're talking about government here, so they don't put up with that crap. And say, oh, no, we're going to make the Mayflower Compact, which basically says you, everybody on this ship is enjoined to, you know, is occasioned to take the command of what we all say, which was basically the Pilgrims said. And they weren't a majority by any means, but they were united. And as usual, the poor guys get screwed. And they said, you are going to be indentured servants. So basically, the Mayflower Compact, it just renewed their fealty to, I guess at that time would have been James I, and basically said, you're still slaves. So that's what the Mayflower Compact was all about. So don't, if you want to read all about it, read Murray Rothbard's book, probably on audiobooks for sure.
On Audible?
Conceived in Liberty. Great book. As is anything by Murray
Rothbard. And how do we celebrate their indentured servitude today?
With Thanksgiving. Yeah. Yeah. When half of them died. Yeah. And that was, and we can go over that sometime too, because they were all socialists. They were actually communists, and that's why they died. And then when they went into an actually a free market society, they thrived or throve. There you are. And we can go over that anytime you like.
There you have it. Okay.
So there we go.
Let's move to
our free market wins again.
So let's move to our fourth one. We've got the opium trade prohibited in China on this date.
Right.
We've got Judas Maccabeus reclaiming the temple in 164 BCE, the Mayflower Compact in 1620. Let me move you ahead to 1791 and let me take you to France.
Oh, okay. What happened there?
Napoleon Bonaparte
is
promoted to general and appointed commander-in-chief of the armies of the French Republic.
That
had a lasting kick-on effect, I would say.
Well, obviously, yeah. I mean, that was that was 24 years of almost continuous warfare in Europe until Congress of Vienna and, you know, Napoleon was killed. Do you ascribe to the fact that do you think he was poisoned, slowly poisoned to death?
I'm thinking. I don't know why to do it slowly. So whenever I've heard that story over the years, what's the motivation for doing it slowly?
I don't know. Well, he's on St. Helena, I guess.
Yeah, but he's on St. Helena at the time, but he had already been imprisoned in Elba.
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but he didn't stay there.
No.
That's what scared everybody. Yeah, he just kept coming back. So, yeah.
He's the unwanted French house guest.
Yeah, this guy's, yeah.
what's your take in terms of the influence Napoleon, because this is the point in history on this date where he really, you know, he is now the commander of the French.
Yeah.
This is one of the world's most formidable.
Oh, absolutely.
Armed forces on the planet at this point. This is an imperialistic nation at this point, and he really drives the bus from there, as you said, for the next 24 years. But in terms of the development of using strategy and intelligence, what kind of credit, or is there too much credit given to Bonaparte for these areas of knowing the ground, knowing when to fight? Is he any better or different than an Alexander the Great or other great military strategist?
That's not exactly my area. I would say that I think he's just lucky, to tell you the truth. I mean, maybe that's being a little bit too facile, but the guy just had a sixth sense, and I'm not sure he revolutionized anything about warfare itself. He just, I don't know, he just knew what he was doing so well. He just did it better than anybody else, that's all.
Until he went to Moscow.
Yeah, well, that was a bad choice. Invading Russia, but then again, he's not the only one to do that.
Everyone
really fought the winner is more than he fought the Russians. So
right.
That was a blunder, but we're going to excuse him for that. He lost Waterloo because he had hemorrhoids.
It's tough to sit on a horse with hemorrhoids.
Yes, he couldn't.
I mean,
sit
not
on
that
horse.
The horse had hemorrhoids. He had hemorrhoids.
Correct. And he couldn't. Apparently, he couldn't view the battle as well as he should have because he was kind of short. And
ride higher.
I'm not sure if that's true.
Ride higher in the stirrups.
That may be apocryphal. You should have got one of those, you know, donuts for coccygeal fractures. You know, that probably
I don't think out on the fields of Flanders.
Is history
that
may have changed.
Waterloo was? Is that
Belgium? Modern-day Belgium. I think maybe it was Flanders. Probably.
I don't think on the Flemish turf you're going to find those rings.
He was a real genius.
That you need. You know, there was no Walgreens to stop into.
No, man, that's a shame. And that's something else we're going to be thankful for. CVS and Rite Aid, too.
Okay.
And here's the big one.
This one you wanted to expand upon on some length. On this date in history, in the year 1905, and again, we had 1906 and 1905, which
this is interesting.
Einstein releases a paper. Now, this paper does not contain the equation E equals MC squared.
I don't believe it was ever mentioned in the paper.
But it is a paper that sets the stage for the arrival at E equals MC squared, and a paper that sets the stage for other things, including the general theory of relativity.
Yeah, you know, an E equals MC squared obviously has a lot of implications, the main one being, of course, the atom bomb, which we all know we're still kind of living under the mushroom cloud of that. But a more practical application is your GPS works by that. I mean, there's time dilation. That's why the satellite, apparently the satellite moves a little bit, time goes a little bit slower for the satellite than it does for us.
So in terms of things like that, you know, they've taken the atomic clock, synced them, leave one in Houston, send another one up with the capsule or space shuttle. And while the difference there is minute,
2 billionths of a second or something,
nonetheless, it's a difference.
Measurable.
Yep. And it's measurable.
And the Michelson-Morley experiment also, for a long time, there was some sort of aberration in the orbit of Mercury around the sun, and nobody could explain it. And they were going to do they had a total eclipse. That's the only time they could do it. And it was 1914. Unfortunately, a little thing called the World War I made them stop. But in 1919, they actually did the experiment. And it confirmed what Einstein said. So there you go.
So that paper in 1905, of course, he's German. Here's the English title. Does the inertia of a body depend upon its energy content if released?
That's correct. In fact, that's what they say. Basically, when you move, what the paper was saying actually was when you move, you lose an infinitesimal amount of mass. So, you know, while we're just sitting here, we're not losing any. But
I just lost
some weight. I waved my arm and I lost a little bit of mass.
I need to lose
from my movement.
I need to lose a lot of mass.
Yeah, you got to get away from that inertia.
Yeah. Well, that inertia will get you, man. But at that point,
it was unbelievable. And they call that his Annus Mirabilis, Year of Miracles.
Yeah, the Year of Miracles.
But he did not win the Academy Award.
The Academy Award?
Yes, well, you know what I'm thinking about. But he did not win the Nobel Peace Prize. And there are only actually two people that won Academy Awards and Nobel Prizes. One was Al Gore, and I will not comment on that ill-gotten award. But the other one was George Bernard Shaw, who wrote the screenplay for Pygmalion.
Pygmalion and then a Nobel Prize for literature.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Very good.
That's a trivia question.
All right.
And I guess before we sign off, you want a couple of death days?
Well, you know, it's nice to end a show of some deaths.
Well, I wanted to, because I know Max Baer died in 59. I mean, you know, and he was Max Baer Sr. This is Jethro's dad.
Now, explain Jethro, though.
Well, Jethro.
Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah, for our younger listeners. Yes. I guess they don't know who that is. But he's on the Beverly Hillbillies. I think he's still alive.
He is. He is doing work. He lives in Reno, Nevada.
Oh, good place to live.
He has some casinos.
Wow.
And, well, imagine
lucky
that,
dog.
Reno. But he had, like, taken, you know, when a Walmart would close and, you know, move on and the building's empty. And, you know, he reclaimed some properties like
so
that.
So he's kind of a commercial estate mogul.
But
brilliant.
Put a casino into an old Walmart.
You know who else made a lot of money in the real estate was Victor Mature, Samson, remember Samson?
Yes.
Yeah, so anyway, but, you know, I want to bring up Max Baer because, you know, if anybody's seen that movie Cinderella Man, he's really not portrayed as the kind of guy he was. He did actually kill a couple guys in the ring, but he was very contrite about it. He actually wanted to stop fighting. He was not the killer he was portrayed. He was kind of a playboy. He made a few movies, actually. He was actually, and one of my favorites is The Harder They Fall, which you got to see. It's a great movie about boxing. And he was just kind of maligned. He was just misrepresented in that movie. So Max was a good guy.
This is a player in its both really became famous in New York. Well, one certainly became famous in New York. You know, Baer was already famous in Germany. And
Buddy
then,
Baer was
and,
his.
And then New York.
Yeah.
But 1 year to the day earlier.
Okay.
November 21st.
Yes.
1958, the great New York Giant Mel Ott died.
I believe. No, he's. Did he hit 400? I'm not sure. Bill Terry was the last National Leaguer to hit. He was a Giant, right? New York Giants?
The last National Leaguer to hit 400.
Bill Terry, I believe.
The last player overall, Ted Williams,
right.
41. Yep. I don't know, but, you know.
I think Bill Terry was 36. I think he was the last National Leaguer.
He was one of the, you know, first to get to 500.
Home runs?
Yes.
Mel Ott?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And
I didn't know he was a big slugger like that.
No, he was. And his Giant teams throughout the 1930s.
Did they win any? At 33, did they win? I think they won at 33, didn't they?
They were a perennial challenger.
Yeah, but they lost a lot.
They got to the World Series and lost a lot. And, of course, that's because they faced.
33, I think they won.
That's because they faced Ruth, Gehrig, DiMaggio.
Right, but down here, they faced the Senators and the
Yankees.
They never had good luck.
Other than that, I did not. Well, Carl Hubble,
the meal ticket.
His teammate would also die on the same date in 1988. Well,
wow, he lived that long? Pretty old guy.
He did.
The guy that struck out.
He was 85 when he passed away. Yeah. Now, Carl Hubble is the guy who
struck out five Hall of Famers in a row.
Yes.
Ruth, Gehrig, Jimmy Fox, Joe Cronin. Who was the other one? Hank Greenberg?
Real quick for you.
Okay. Five Hall of Famers in the All-Star game.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Carl Hubble, the meal ticket. That's what they called him. I think he won like 24 games in a row, too. Yeah, he had some record like that, too.
Oh, he was,
he was a hell of a pitcher.
Incredible pitcher. Absolutely. And, his just obliteration of some of the game's best hitters.
Yeah, he mowed them down.
At that point,
Was that the 1936 All-Star game?
Yeah, well, Google's not helping me for the second for some reason.
Yeah, because I would think that'd be, Carl Hubble. You put him up there and you're going to get, that was a feat that'll probably never be equaled, obviously.
It came close to being equaled by Dwight Gooden.
Oh, yeah? Who did he strike out?
And again, I have to shift over to look. But Carl Hubble and...
here we go. 1934 All-Stars. That would have been the second All-Star game.
Yeah, just the second one because they started the...
And Bill Terry was a manager of all people. Mm-hmm. There you go. So we know that. It was at the Polo Grounds. Ruth, Gehrig, Al Simmons, Jimmy Fox, and Joe Cronin.
Al Simmons, who would have been a...
Wasn't he one of the Athletics?
Philadelphia Athletic at that point.
Athletics.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So it's kind of, teammates.
Anybody else?
Not that caught my eye on November 21st. So there you have it. If you had to make a conclusion out of our big five,
Equals MC squared.
I would agree the paper, again, called Does the Inertia of a Body Depend Upon Its Energy Being Released? This leads to equals
yes.
MC squared and rewrites
all of
our histories from the application of that from that point onward. Again, this day in history brought to you by audible.com and by amazon.com.
Oh, I love it.
So if you would like the audiobook, feel free. If you prefer the paper version, go to amazon.com
and buy the stock. It's cheap.
Which started with selling books, and you can still get them at amazon.com. And what we ask you to do is go to our website, Today in History Show. When you see that banner, you click on it and you do some book shopping.
Simple.
Very simple.
I hit
you
one
won't
button.
Be disappointed.
I love it. I hit one
you
button.
You won't be disappointed. For Armand Kachigian, and I'm Tony Hubert. Hope you enjoyed this first installment of our show. And listen in tomorrow when November 22nd rolls around and find out what we talk about on This Day in History.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.